This is our birthday girl here, right?
Yes, ma'am.
What is her name?
Aditi.
Aditi.
Her birthday is on Saturday.
Aditi. Does she respond to her name?
Yes, she does.
Aditi. Hare Krishna. Okay. No Aditi. In honor of Aditi's, what's third birthday?
First
birthday.
Yes.
She's a big girl for
yes.
1 year old.
Lord told everything.
Okay. In honor of Aditi's first birthday, I was asked to speak something about parenting. Yes? So I'm going to do so in an interesting way, hopefully. In relation to the Vatsasura demon being killed by Krishna, there's a nice discussion by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in relation to parenting. So we'll get to the parenting discussion after the Leela part. Okay? And before we get to the Leela part, a little appreciation from our acharyas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, on the nature of Krishna's pastimes. So before I change the slide, little terminology. I'm raising my hand up in the air, pointing to Goloka Vrindavan. The spiritual world far beyond this world is Goloka Vrindavan in the vastness of the spiritual sky. The largest of all the planets in the spiritual sky is Goloka Vrindavan. And from time to time, Yada Yadahi Dharmasya Glanir Bhavati Bharata, Krishna appears. And he appears in this realm. We call this realm Goloka, or also Vrindavan. So there's the pastimes in the spiritual world, and the pastimes of the spiritual world manifest in this world. And they're not different because it's the same personality, the same supreme person, and the abodes. She wants the Mridanga. I don't think she's going to sit still either. The places are the person, the absolute supreme personality of Godhead is the same in Goloka and Gokula. The abode is the same in Goloka and Gokula. The pastimes are the same but different. It is a very wonderful discussion in Sri Brahma Samhita Bhaktisiddhanta has a 12-page purport to explain it. And if you have a nice dictionary and a lot of patience, you can go through it. Text 37. But I'll just summarize it in a simple way. There are pastimes that Krishna performs in this realm that have these two divisions. One is Nitya, eternal pastimes, Nitya Lila. And there's Naimittika, or occasional pastimes, Naimittika Leela. And the distinction is, in the occasional pastimes that take place when Krishna appears in this world, there are some things that don't happen in the spiritual world. Like, there's no birth pastime in the spiritual world. There's no demons in the spiritual world. There's no demons in the spiritual world. Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. in the spiritual world. There's the sense of these things, but there's no pastime like that. It's a very deep science, but it's to just leave it at that. It's a sense of demons, although there's no demons. And in here, there's demons. So there's a difference. That's these occasional pastimes. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes that these occasional pastimes are especially beneficial for us, you know, the conditioned souls within this world, trying to become devotees. That's us. There's a purpose for them. It's for us. He goes on. Practicing devotees, sadhakas, that's us. Understand that these occasional pastimes to be something like negatively tinted reflections of the eternal pastimes. And that's part of this 12-page purport that I won't go into right now. That's not... The term that Bhaktisiddhanta uses in Sri Brahma Samhita is vi-brahma-vilas. There's four defects of every conditioned soul, and one is they make mistakes. That's spelled B-H-R-A-M-A. Not Lord Brahma, it's a different spelling. B-H-R-A-M-A means to make mistakes. And vi-brahma is like big mistakes. Mega mistakes. Vit-brahma-vilas. Vilas is like the word lila. It means pastimes, but it has a special connotation. It means very sweet and esoteric, and vilas has that connotation. Vibrahma, vilas. And Bhaktisiddhanta translates that as seeming error, both in the spiritual world and here. So, that's what this negatively tinted reflections of the eternal pastimes means. Sometime we have a half an hour, I'll describe that to you in detail. But it's like, but it's not exactly. It appears, so here's the example given. In Goloka, there's no demons. But sometimes some unknown person comes running through Vrindavan and says, "Look out! Aristasura is coming! Aristasura is coming!" And everyone goes, "Krishna! Aristasura is coming!" And then the person disappears and Aristasura never comes. But there's the bhav, or vibrama vilas, that there's a demon and they have to take shelter of Krishna. So it's an emotion that intensifies the feeling of taking shelter of Krishna. So that exists in this Goloka. And here there's demons. Kamsa sends demons, tries to kill Krishna, and Krishna kills the demons. So the rest of what he says here is, such sincere devotees hope, that's us, we're trying to be sincere devotees, and we're hope that by the influence of understanding the purpose of Krishna's performance of different occasional pastimes, their own various anartas or unwanted material contaminations will be destroyed. That would be nice, isn't it? And what he's saying is just by the pastime itself, or narrating the pastime, or hearing the pastime, as we're doing this evening, it has a potency. The potency of eradication of our own contaminations. That's why Krishna performs them, for our eradication of unwanted things. So the summary is, by remembering these pastimes, devotees have this aspiration. We want our own impurities and demoniac mentalities and bad tendencies to be removed. So that's why I'm telling the pastime. That's why Krishna performs the pastime too. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives some examples the Kaliya snake, the personification of malice, polluted the Jamuna waters. So the Lord performed the pastime of, he banished, he danced on his head and smashed his hoods and corrected that tendency, that contaminating the place where you perform your devotional practices. And then another example, Krishna is swallowing the forest fire. There may be quarrel amongst Vaishnavas. And when Krishna swallows the forest fire, he protects us from the tendency for quarrel. Like that. So these are examples. You see the references, Krishna Samhita, Chaitanya Shikshamrita. There are different places where he writes about this. So, we're all familiar with Shikshastaka. In case there's somebody here not familiar, these are eight teachings or instructions given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in relation to, specifically in relation to the process of chanting the holy name, but also in the process of devotional service in general. And in the second Shikshastakam verse, he writes, Nam Nam Akari Bahuda Nija Sarva Shaktihi, which means that Krishna has unlimited names, Nam Nam Akari Bahuda, Prabhupada translates it, such as Krishna and Govinda, etc. And in each and every one of these names, he has invested Nija Sarva Shaktis, unlimited potency. So you're familiar with Bhagavad Gita in the first chapter. In different places, Arjuna addresses Krishna by different names. Sometimes it's Rishikesh, Madhusudana, different names, yes? And in the commentary, Prabhupada explains, this name is invoked because it carries a specific potency. The master of the senses, Achyuta, oh infallible, oh Rishikesh. So each of the names of Krishna indicates something. Similarly, each of the pastimes, which are also absolute, they carry potency. So we're going to be narrating this pastime of Krishna's killing Vatsasura that has a specific potency, which has some effect of helping us, especially children, to receive protection of Krishna, and as parents of children, to understand how to extend proper protection to children. And even those that aren't parents, like me, how to understand that principle and be bearers of that principle, just by hearing the pastime. So we're going to hear the pastime. Krishna and Balaram, as they grew, usually the standard was that little boys, they would be entrusted with the service of herding the calves when they became five. But Krishna was precocious. He was given that service when he turned three. You know, think of somebody, child that's 3 years old, and they're given the service of taking care of the calves. In Gopal Champu, there's a description of that Leela, the whole chapter dedicated to it, where Krishna was very enthusiastic, 3-year-old boy, to go take care of the calves. And Nanda Maharaj was considering, well, normally this isn't done, but Krishna is so good, we'll let him do it. So they had a festival. And somebody, just give them half an excuse and there's a festival. So they had a big festival. And all the residents of Vrindavan, in honor of Krishna, beginning to take care of the calves, because he's the son of the king, Nanda Maharaj. And their occupation is taking care of cows. So they brought different paraphernalia. One brought a buffalo horn, so Krishna could call the cows or the calves. Some brought a little lati, a little stick. They can tap the side of the calves as they're moving along the path. They start to stray. Some brought some rope so Krishna could tie one of the calves if needed. And Mother Jasoda had a very special gift. She had a very nice white silk umbrella that Krishna could hold over his head, and a cowherd boy to hold it for Krishna, and a pair of shoes, the kind of shoes like you find in Rajasthan that have the pointy toes and they curl around. And now they just have little mylar mirrors studded along the side of the shoes. But then Krishna's shoes had actual jewels. And Krishna accepted all the other gifts, but he didn't accept the shoes or the umbrella from Mother Jasoda. She was very disappointed. But Krishna said, our occupation is to give protection to the cows. So how can I accept shoes when the cows don't have shoes? I'll accept shoes only if you give one umbrella for each of the calves and four shoes for each of the calves. And there's 900,000 cows in Maharaj Nanda's herd. So so many calves times four means so many shoes and so many umbrellas and a boy to carry the umbrella. Krishna didn't go with the shoes. But he began herding the calves. You see them in bare feet. Not far away, when they went off into the forest to take care of the calves, what do little boys do that are 3-4 years old? They play. And they had all kinds of play things. This is from Krishna book. They had flutes and canes and horns and veenas and balls and slingshots and all kinds of other playing objects. And in this section it says what the cowherd boys really did was they just went out and played. But because the cows had such affection for Krishna, or the calves, they just stayed by. So it was just a time for playing, and the calves followed them around. Sometimes when Krishna and Balaram would play on their flutes. Sometimes they would throw ropes and stones devised for getting fruits from the trees. Sometimes they would throw only stones, and sometimes, their ankle bells tinkling, they would play football with fruits like bale and amalaki. Sometimes they would cover themselves with blankets and imitate cows and bulls and fight with one another, roaring loudly. And sometimes they would imitate the voices of animals. In this way they enjoyed sporting like two ordinary human children. And they would just do this all day long. They would just wander here and there, playing, using their flutes, and so many other things. And by the way, the calves would follow them wherever they went. Sometimes, this picture shows, they would jump into the water like frogs. Sometimes they would run like the deer. And sometimes they would pose like the peacocks. Sometimes Krishna and Balaram would just hang by a tree and play, and the cowherd boys were mesmerized by the sound of Krishna's flute. So now comes Vatsasura. This is Jiva Goswami's commentary on this pastime. He said, Kamsa was considering, simply by hearing Krishna's name causes my heart to tremble. By some trick, by some clever plan, he must be killed. Already I have tried, plan after plan, each one more clever than the last one. But all have failed, they were useless. So as he was considering walking around the palace, he asked, according to what you have seen, whom does Krishna love the most? The spy replied, I think Krishna is most filled with love for his calves. Kamsa then calculated, return to your home. So he asked for Vatsasura to come, and Vatsasura had great power. He was able even to give distress to Indra. So many others surrounding Kamsa whispered praise in the ear of Vatsasura. Soon he arrived. Kamsa greeted him as if a son. "Dear child, Vatsasura, please go to Nanda's village of Vraja. Approach Nanda's small son as he herds the calves. Then you yourself, assuming the form of a calf, attack Nanda's son, affirming his obedience by saying, 'As the king commands, so I will act.'" Vatsasura went to the Jamuna's banks. Catch Krishna with his guard down, because he has so much affection for the calves, appear like a calf. So that same day, Krishna and Balaram were by the side of the river Jamuna, and Vatsasura came disguised as a calf. Jiva Goswami says, when Krishna herded the calves, Krishna thought Vatsasura was like a poisonous snake. Krishna wasn't fooled at all. Although he was amongst the calves, Krishna knew his mentality was that of a demoniac personality, not a gentle calf at all. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead saw that the demon had assumed the form of a calf and entered among the groups of other calves, he pointed out to Baladev, "Here is another demon." So, more detail from Jiva Goswami. Observing Vatsasura accompanying the calves as, I think it's they, as they sniffed the sweet aromas as they wandered among the grass, Vraja's prince Krishna said to his elder brother Balaram, "Big brother, what calf is that? I don't know that calf. That calf was not with us in the morning." Balaram replied, "Indeed, that calf was not here then. It was not here." Krishna said, "Tell me about that calf." Balaram said, "I think that calf is dangerous." Krishna said, "Oh brother, is that calf a demon?" Balaram said, "Yes, he must be. He stares at us with hate-filled eyes." Krishna said, "If you command, I will kill this demon." Balaram said, "If I fear people will criticize you, saying, 'You have killed a calf,' and thereby committed a sin." And Krishna replied, "If at the moment of death this creature manifests his true original form as a demon, no one will criticize me." Balaram joyfully replied, "O crusher of the hate-filled demons, slowly approach this treacherous demon." So very slowly Krishna approached the demon, as if he didn't at all understand the demon's intentions. And then Krishna caught the demon by the hind legs and tail, twirled the demon's whole body very strongly, and by centrifugal force he lost his life. Krishna, again says, twirled the demon's whole body very strongly until the demon was dead, and then threw him to the top of a kapita tree, which fell down along with the body of the demon, who then assumed this giant demon form. You'll see a picture. And the intention was two things at once. Kill the demon, knock some kapita fruits off the tree for the cowherd boys to enjoy. And this is a painting by Pushkar. I like this very much. There's the Vatsasura demon who assumed the form of an innocent calf. And Krishna, knowing the intention, destroyed the demon. And in the upper planetary system, all the demigods were pleased, and therefore they showered flowers on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's another illustration of the Vatsasura demon. And after killing the demon, Krishna and Balaram finished their breakfast in the morning. And while continuing to take care of the calves, they wandered here and there. They finished their afternoon pastimes. Krishna and Balaram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead who maintains the entire creation, now took charge of the calves as if cowherd boys. So Krishna's in the role of just a simple village boy taking care of the cows and calves as their family occupation, but at the same time killing the duskritis. Krishna did not want to hamper his daily affairs, for it was routine work. While he tended the calves on the bank of the river Jamuna, two or three incidents took place every day. And although these were serious, killing the demons one after another appeared to be his daily routine work. So, now we're going to hear something by our acharyas. This one is who Vatsasura was in his previous life. This is from Garga Samhita. In his previous life, Vatsasura was a great demon whose name was Pramila. And Pramila was the son of Muru. After conquering the demigods, he entered Vashishta Muni's ashram and saw a cow named Nandini. Desiring that cow, the demon transformed himself into a brahmana and begged for the beautiful cow. As Vashishta, who had divine vision, stood silent, the cow spoke. Sri Nandini said, "You're a demon, Muru's son, and you've assumed the form of a brahmin to steal the sage's cow, therefore a wicked-hearted one. Now you become a calf." The great demon that was Muru's son at once became a calf. He circumambulated Vashishta and the cow, bowed down and said, "Please save me." The cow said, "Oh great demon, at the end of Dwarpa Yuga, when you go among many calves, you will attain liberation." So now some words from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He's the one who we were quoting at the beginning. Bhaktivinoda Thakur expressed in his writings, Vatsasura, or the calf demon, represents a childish mentality, mischievousness, and too easily influenced by bad association. Children. The principle carried by Vatsasura gives rise to a type of greediness for sense gratification through which one becomes absorbed in materialism. Vatsasura represents evils that are peculiar to boyhood. The neophyte is extremely susceptible to such evils. Neophyte devotee, that's us. They can only be eliminated by the mercy of Krishna. And if one engages in Krishna service, they will be completely eradicated at an early stage. So that's Bhaktivinoda Thakur's comment on the Vatsasura demon. And now we're going to discuss a little bit Bhaktisiddhanta's language. Now, I'm just going to show you that there's 5-6 points, but rather than having that on the screen, you get lost in what's on the screen. I'm just going to explain it. There's a long essay. It appeared in The Harmonist when Bhaktisiddhanta was making his headquarters at the Chaitanya Math in Sridhar Mayapur. He had a newspaper, and the newspaper was bi-weekly, I believe, and he had his own articles, and one series in each of the different publications was topics about Krishna's killing of the demons. So in the section about Vatsasura, he had a long article that actually took several parts. And I'm just going to summarize the main points. And this is now the topic of parenting. And he's speaking specifically about boys, but the same principle applies to girls. The first point is what he calls a puritanical mentality. Those of you from India may not know what Puritanism is. There was the Catholic Church, and then there was those who didn't like the corruption in the Catholic Church, and they became protesters of that corruption and became Protestants. So Protestants and Catholics amongst Christianity. And amongst those who are Christians, there was a group that came to America. One of the groups came to America, called themselves, or they became known as, the Puritans. Bhaktisiddhanta writes, it was actually the youth that gave them the name. Puritan. So the Puritan spirit is children shouldn't play. And very, 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 very severely, strictly, there was prohibition of children to play. Bhaktisiddhanta writes that that's unwholesome. There's a natural tendency in children to be children, to enjoy child play. And parents shouldn't curtail, up to a certain age at least, some amount of playing. It's wholesome. This is his first point. And his second point is, there is such a thing as black sheep. He uses that, you've heard that term, black sheep. The rotten oil, apple that spoils the barrel, the black sheep amongst the sheep. So there is such a thing as bad association for children, and parents need to be alert to that, he confirms. But his instruction is, it's not just by being strict with the children, don't do this and don't do that and don't associate with this one and don't associate with that one. Rather, those efforts can be made, but they're not going to be effective. That association is going to contaminate. Unless there's affinity, or unless the child is trained to become attached to Krishna. It's a transcendental solution to that problem that he acknowledges. Here's the way he says it. With every precaution, it has been found impossible to attain the double purpose of ensuring innocence without the contamination of the black sheep. The scriptures say it is not in the power of man to ensure the immunity of boys and girls from the blight of sensuousness except by the means of service to Krishna. Let the children be exposed to the attraction of the cowherd boy of Raja. They will soon learn to pick up his company. They will easily realize that Krishna alone can save them from every form of danger to which they are exposed by the right of their childhood nature or juvenile nature. The right to be joyful, at the same time the right to be protected by Krishna by taking shelter of Krishna. That's a wholesome approach that if it's learned in childhood, it saves you throughout life. Then a third point that he covers is what he calls a rotten arrangement. And the rotten arrangement is that by curbing sensuousness in children, they'll be sensually strong in their adult life and they can enjoy their adult life fully. So curb them when they're young so they'll be capable enjoyers in their mature stage. So admonishes parenting with that kind of an idea. And then another is the strictness that may be applied by parents to children, or self-imposed strictness, has another idea, and this other idea he also doesn't like. Well, by becoming very strong in mind and strong in intellect for what he calls prying into the secrets of nature, becoming a scientist or a researcher of the mysteries of nature, and if you become very sense-controlled and strong like that, things that will be useful to you for, understanding nature and becoming the controller of nature from that understanding of nature, he also found that abhorrent. There's a purpose for sense control as a child is growing up, and that's not it. He writes, this is a standalone paragraph, morality is a valued commodity only on the plane of delusion, but it has no locus standi on the plane where the conditions of existence are perfect. In other words, Bhaktisiddhanta was very clear and strong about the purpose of life. Morality is not the purpose of life. Parents wish, for sure, and they should, teach their children the difference between right and wrong. His position is that the real purpose of parenting is to guide the soul and trust it to the parents as their son or daughter to life's ultimate purpose. And if it falls short of that ultimate purpose and goes just to the platform of morality, it's robbing the child or the soul of that real destination of life. So it's a big challenge in our modern times to impart morality in an atmosphere that isn't so strong in morality and other virtues. But his position is the duty of parenting goes far beyond that. If it stops at that, it's unfair, or it's inadequate. It's unwholesome. Where even in the case of Dharma, where the purpose of Dharma remains just to be dharmic. And for what purpose? Be dharmic so that you have piety. For what purpose? So you get pious credit. So what purpose? So that you'll prosper. So that you can enjoy. The motivation of being an enjoyer of the resources of nature, or enjoyers in life, through the agency of Dharma, is not the purpose of Dharma. And parents need to understand that principle, Paradharma principle, and pass on that Paradharma principle as parents to their children. You can only pass on what you have. You can give to others what you have. So the responsibility of parents for being knowing what it is and fulfilling it allows the real duty of parenting to take place, and the benefit to be derived by dependents, because dependents are, after all, dependent on what is supplied by their parents. Two other points. There's pages of this, by the way. And this is just summary pages. He writes, juvenile innocence is desired on account of its enjoyability. Juvenile innocence is desired. The innocence of being a child. It's very enjoyable. There isn't the pressure and trouble and complication of complexity. Just simple innocence. It's very enjoyable. But it should be properly desired only for the service of Krishna. the parent can have no higher duty than to employ his boy or girl in the service of Krishna by putting him under the proper teacher, the pure devotee of Krishna. So parents have a role, certainly most important role, in the family. They're the most proximate person to the child. Naturally so, but by nature's arrangement, it's so. And the parents, he writes, naturally then have some attachment on the bodily platform, because after all, that's the nature of parenting in children. So it's necessary for the parents to fulfill their objective to connect the children to a pure devotee. That's what his teaching is. You know, the Vedic model, he elaborates, is the parents would place the child at the age of 5 in the care of a teacher. It literally, they would stay in the ashram of the teacher and become attached to someone other than their biological parent, the teacher, and the teacher being a qualified person, a brahmana, who would guide and train and pass on values and so forth and so on. That's the Vedic model. So a contemporary model, certainly Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was trained by his father. His father didn't send him to a school where he was trained elsewhere. But yet, becoming attached, exactly as Bhaktivinoda Thakur did, he encouraged his son, when the opportunity was there, to develop some affinity for Gorkhishordas Babaji Maharaj. And that principle is a principle out of all of what Bhaktisiddhanta is here instructing in relation to Vatsasura, or the responsibilities of parenting. And the last point, I'm going to read two different paragraphs, although it has about 8 paragraphs. Childish naughtiness is apt to be overlooked, even encouraged, under the impression that it is the nature to be naughty. This opinion overlooks the all-important factor that the training is intended for the welfare of the soul of the boy or girl, and not for the juvenile body or mind. He's a transcendentalist. The soul does not require to be treated with indulgence. The soul is neither young nor old in the worldly sense. The body and the mind of the child have to be employed in the interests of the soul. Childish naughtiness and childish virtue are alike unnecessary for the soul. It is necessary for the soul to be freed from either forms of worldliness. The mundane nature of the child is no less a clog to the wheel of spiritual progress than the adult nature of the grown-up worldly person. The process of training is identical in the two cases. Of the soul is neither young nor old. So, in other words, the behaviors of the child are external, and allowing the child, which he already explained before, to have to play and be joyful and be innocent is part of parenting. But the greater part of parenting is to see the soul, although the child, the soul may be in a child's body, or the soul may be in an adult body. See to the interests of the soul according to the embodiment. You relate to the individual according to their circumstance of life. But see the interest of the soul. That's his emphasis. Here's another paragraph. The king of atheist Kamsa is always setting the demon Vatsasura to corrupt and destroy children. The teacher of the young, employed by the atheistic society, is verily the agent of Kamsa. Modern education. The atheist is afraid lest the boys or girls are employed in the service of Krishna. The teachers, materialistic personality teachers, are naturally anxious to prevent any acquaintance with the children, with Krishna. If a child has really found Krishna, the nefarious activities of the empiric teacher are powerless to destroy his innocence. If such a teacher perseveres in the fruitless attempt, he will thereby quickly bring about his own utter moral degradation, and his sorry trick will also be fully exposed, because in this case it is Krishna himself who opposes his wicked activities on behalf of his protege. In other words, like the pastime, Krishna will give protection to the innocent child, and the child needs to be encouraged to take shelter of Krishna. Now, how an adult and how a child will see taking shelter of Krishna may look very different. But if nicely trained, the child gets it in their own way and acts out in their own way. I have this experience, and I forgot to bring the Mahaprasadam this evening. I had this experience once in Bombay. I was visiting at the Chaupati Temple, and a couple of families that I knew from the Bombay area came, and so, and I did my usual thing. I had some Mahaprasadam. And the first one that I offered Mahaprasadam to was a young boy. And he just looked at me, kept his arms by his side, and just looked at me. I thought maybe he's shy or something, so I just, you know, smiled and gave prasadam to everybody, and then came back and offered him some prasadam, and he just looked at me. And his mother leaned over and whispered something, and his hand went out and accepted the prasadam. And I said, "What did you say to him?" I told him it was prasadam, because he's understood the principle that he won't take anything unless it's been offered to Krishna. So he didn't know if it was offered to Krishna or not offered to Krishna, so he didn't accept it. And then, you know, here's prasadam, like sweets, milk sweets. And you could see it because it was in my hand, a milk sweet. But if it's offered to Krishna. And now that child is a 12-year-old, or maybe 13, something like that. And, you know, it because it was inside his childhood, it's inside now. He's not a fanatic. He's just very clear about taking shelter of Krishna and that which is in relation to Krishna, and not otherwise. That's all. No big deal. Not a big, you know, scene about it. Just, that's the principle that he wants to live his life by. Now he has, you know, a young adult or a teenage perspective on the same thing that he learned when he was very young. And when he becomes a young adult and then an adult, the same principle will be there. So that's the message that Bhaktisiddhanta is passing on. The way that Prabhupada said it is, a child is like clay. You can mold clay into whatever you want. But you have to know what you want. And it's not like you force, but you as parents, you pass on. It happens in any culture, anywhere in the world. Any, doesn't matter. There's values, and values are passed on. And if the values are spiritual values, or that this kind of emphasis that Bhaktisiddhanta is establishing, you know, the things that we do in the home, the basis of the things that we do in the home are determined by spiritual value, period. And, you know, if there's need to explain why, you explain why. Not just because my grandmother did it, that's why we do it. There's a reason why. There's a reason why grandmother did it. Then you explain the why reason to the child. And so that they understand, you know, what's the principle behind making choices. And once they understand that, it stays with them naturally. And to repeat, that placing that on the transcendental platform in a consistent manner is only going to be possible if the parents have that kind of reflectiveness or inquisitiveness or conception, spiritual conception that they live by and are themselves cultivating and imbibing and passing on. Then it becomes very easy. Life as parents, I'm not a parent, but I interact with lots of parents. And parenting isn't easy. It's, you know, different stages, there's different challenges, and it's not easy. So hats off to all of you that are taking that responsibility. At the same time, if you act as parents, the more that you act as parents from the spiritual platform, the easier it is. And the less that you do, the more complicated it is. It's really complicated. Really complicated. The further one goes from the spiritual platform, it gets really complicated. So do yourselves a favor. Make it simple. Go to the spiritual platform and live your lives that way and share that within your families. And like these nice, just as simple as hearing the pastimes of Krishna within the family, reading together the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. Even specifically the pastimes of Krishna's killing the demons in Vrindavan. Even if you don't know all these things that Bhaktisiddhanta and Bhaktivinoda Thakur have to say, disclosing the specific potencies of specific pastimes and specific names and specific forms of protection. Even if you don't know those details, just hearing the pastimes strengthens your spiritual well-being, helps specifically to remove obstacles on the path of neophyte devotees or sadhakas who wish to go strongly on the path to Krishna. There's great strength, great power, great potency in them. And by the grace of Bhaktisiddhanta and Bhaktivinoda Thakura, some of these special features of these pastimes are disclosed. And a very nice... I'll make this article available for those who want it. I'll give a copy, send a copy to Saranga Thakur. If you want a copy, you ask him, and he'll provide you with a copy. Those of you that want to know some of the details of what Bhaktisiddhanta writes on this topic. Hare Krishna. Any discussion? Yeah.
I guess you mentioned that we should put more emphasis on the spiritual platform because that would...
That's who we really are. That's our real identity.
Right, but we hear sometimes argument from parents that, that's probably deprives the children in terms of being able to withstand later on in the material world, and also even for preaching purposes, they won't be able to kind of see what's going on, or they might not be able to get exposed. They don't get the well-rounded, both the spiritual and the material aspects. So it's better for them to actually be in the educate in the material education, so that they're getting the spiritual thing anyway from the parents at the association at home.
read the article and see what Bhaktisiddhanta says about that. As with adults, so also with children. Just be a spirit soul in whatever the stage and age of the body, and we're making choices. And certainly, it's necessary to assist an adult or a child or whatever the stage of embodiment to make wise choices. And the strength to make wise choices comes from a connection with Krishna. The intelligence to make wise choices comes from Krishna. So a strong Krishna connection is necessary to end up in a good place. Competence in execution of worldly duties. It depends on the values of life that one holds. And it also depends upon, let's say, the karmic background of an individual. Some persons can learn things very quickly. Some persons have to study and study and study and study, and even then they don't learn things so quickly. And, the world is filled with varieties. In other words, I was being asked a question just today, something about when Irmala was here previously, and she was speaking about we're all destined for a certain amount of pain and pleasure. Remember that discussion? And some people think if I really work hard, then I'll get more pleasure. I'll get more stuff. I'll get more results. So I get more stuff, then I'll get more pleasure. One may get more stuff, and one isn't going to necessarily get more pleasure by having more stuff. Even if the extra effort gets more stuff. And that's no guarantee either. So, better, in principle, better that the proper orientation of the soul towards the goal of life is given or imparted and ensured and protected and nurtured, and then according to one's capacity one can grow more and learn more when one is in a protected atmosphere and inspired to learn rather than in a competitive atmosphere, learning another value in life, that is, compete so that you win, so that you become happy. Ratadhaja Swami, I don't know if you know this, he spent some number of years, maybe somebody knows the number, 15 or 20 years, some large number of years, working with a Gurukul in Alachua. And he shared with me, there were some parents who were concerned that maybe by doing the Gurukul model or a homeschooling model, one or the other, that the children won't be as equipped to compete in college. And he found out from helping the children who wanted to go on to college that college admissions people at many universities preferred to take children who had been trained this way than the competitive way, because they were more likely to succeed in college because they liked learning rather than they were just like competitive and then distracted by other forms of competition like social competition and extracurricular nonsense competition. That they found they were better students. If they had a choice, they would of equal qualification, they chose the one who was trained this other way because the aptitude of learning, they could actually absorb and assimilate more and better or like for employers, of course, some employers just look for what your track record is. But the better employers look for attitude, not just what your resume says. We're going through this thing in ISKCON of succession, because there's a number of persons who are in our leadership positions who are older, and others have to take on some responsibility, and you know, to train them. We have to train people to take on the services that we're doing. So we're looking, one of the things that gets repeated regularly is in Google, they don't so much look at, you know, what college you went to, what grade you got, and what was your GPA, and all that stuff. What they do is when they do the interview, they present problems and they ask, what creative solutions would you look to solve these problems? And depending upon the responses, they hire. So it's attitude and, you know, a learning aptitude and meeting challenge aptitude in a fresh and thoughtful way. That's what they look for. Of course, somebody has to have basics. And then, you know, and therein lies success. So if the question of being successful in life, do I need to have exposure to, you know, X number of worldly things or some percentage of worldly things, that comes with life anyway, just by being here. So how do I sort my way through and, you know, achieve my full potential, be who I really am? The model that you just put forward that some people say is not a model that has a lot of traction. Certainly not what our Acharya Bhaktisiddhanta has to say, nor even modern educators. Certain of modern educators. Jayadvaita Swami never finished high school. And Prabhupada recognized his qualification and trained him in editing. Personally trained him in editing. He made him his editor. Satyaraj never finished high school. And now he's writing college textbooks on religion and Hinduism. Doesn't have a college education, but to speak of a PhD. Many of our artists, Drudha Karma, doesn't have a PhD. And so on. And when there's an eagerness, a spirit to learn and to manifest one's full potential, that's what's wanted. And to do that on a spiritual basis, that is to make an offering to Krishna, what better impetus is there than that? One can withstand all kinds of things and succeed in all kinds of things. Krishna will provide the resources. It's just part of spiritual reality. Something else?
Guru Maharaj, related question, how do we draw a line? How do we draw the boundary line? How much of like material education versus spiritual education, especially for like teenage kids, and in that case, how do we make a judgment? It's sometimes challenging to figure it out.
So much, to answer that question, so much depends upon the particulars. You know, one child, one thing, another child, another thing. One set of parents, one thing, another set of parents, another thing. It's case specific. how much, where do you draw the line? I would say before you approach that question, ensure that the spiritual core is intact. Make your best effort in the earlier stages of life, because you're referring to specifically teenage, at the earlier stage of life, that the spiritual core is in place. And then, it's something like, there's a very nice purport in Canto 1, Chapter 9, Bhishma Dev's instructions to Yudhisthira. After he pacifies Yudhisthira, Yudhisthira asks him how to perform duties of a king. So in that section, there's one verse where Bhishma Dev describes how to train a child. And I'm paraphrasing here, but in child training, there's something that's universal, and that's, you know, character training, character development. But the duty of a teacher that's training the child is they see their nature, the varna. This one likes building things. This one likes books. This one likes music. This one likes drawing. So, according to nature, a qualified brahmana knows how to encourage this propensity, that propensity. Varna related. And it's their qualification as a teacher. Like, you know, just like a high court judge is... A high court judge is qualified to understand the nature of a situation. That's his gift. You know, like an athlete is gifted to understand, you know, whatever their particular sport is, to whether to run left or right as they're carrying the football or something like that. They're just gifted like that. So a teacher is qualified especially to understand the nature of the child and place before the child the resources that help the child to grow. As a parent, how much depends upon the skill, the gift of the parent, and therefore Bhaktisiddhanta is inviting someone that's not just the parent, because the parent may be attached and want to go left instead of right, when it should be right instead of left. You know, impose their expectations upon the child rather than recognizing the child's propensities and nurturing that propensity. So it's case specific. Some children are more spiritually inclined, some are more materialistic in their inclination, and you're using that kind of dichotomy. So then, you know, a greater challenge. Some are more math-oriented, some are more language-oriented. Anyway, so depending upon the nature, encourage and give the resources. You know, expect the value of self-discipline to not just be frivolous and pick up this and put that this down, pick up that, put that down, pick up something else, put that down. You know, be disciplined in orientation, but to, you know, to grow. So it's part of the challenge of parenting, and it's case specific. But the most important thing is the core is there, because supposing you get all the other things right, but you don't get that right, that's a mess. You get that right, and even you don't get the other things exactly right, it's not a mess. You know, Krishna will make adjustments. Something else? I'm surprised. So many parents and silence and parenting. Yes.
Sometimes some parents say that the first priority for kids is education, and some parents say that Krishna consciousness is the first priority. So which one would be the first priority for kids?
Well, Bhakti Siddhanta says the first priority, I'm using this word core, and the core is the well-being of the soul. Or the way Prabhupada, so that's Bhakti Siddhanta's language. In Prabhupada's language, from spiritual well-being, material well-being follows. Like the shadow follows an object. You know what I mean? Here's a light, here's my hand. So it's, you know, it casts a shadow on the table. As my hand moves, the shadow moves. So rather than being worried about the shadow, I can just be concerned about the hand, the position of the hand to take care of the shadow part. So the education element is, it, Bhakti Siddhanta's language again, it's body and mind. And it's not a zero. It's not like we don't care about that. But it follows the spiritual well-being. But education, real education, is starts with spiritual education. And then there's the practical affairs of life kind of education, where you learn math, and you learn history, and you learn science, and you learn language, and you learn. And those are tools that in the hands of a person that has the right core, they can use those tools in really wonderful ways. I'll give you an example. How old are you?
10.
So there's a girl that's, I think she's 16. And she wrote and said, I really don't like my subjects in school. So when I can't come home from school, I don't do my homework. I just sit and chant. And I know that it's nice to sit and chant, but I know that I should also be doing my homework. And I know I'm like, you know, I'm not like that. My parents are going to get on my case. It's just like I don't like to do lousy in school, but I really don't like my subjects. So what should I do? So I explained, it's not so much that when you're, you know, you graduated from school, you can remember all the details of the homework assignments that you completed. All that's information you're not going to retain. But there'll be a discipline and a sharpening of your intellectual skills and things that as you become older, in devotion to Krishna, you'll be able to use. You know, like me. I use the things that I... The discipline things, not, you know, the details of math and chemistry and biology and all that stuff I took. It's the discipline. And I'm still able to use that. I draw upon that even now. So, they're both valuable. Priority-wise, spiritual education and training at first. But it's not the other one that becomes a zero. The other one is a facility to help the primary one. I can serve Krishna better than if I hadn't had, you know, the kind of training and education that I had. What do you think? You like the answer? What do your parents think? You think they'll like the answer? Well, let me ask you a question. An honest answer, please. Do you neglect your academic work? Are you like lazy in your academic work, your school work? Kinda?
No.
No, you apply yourself. Okay, good. Now, one reason that you could apply yourself is compete and win and do better than the one next to you and the other ones in the class and like be best. That's one motivation. It's a material motivation. And another motivation is, I don't know exactly today how I'm going to use what I'm learning today, tomorrow. Like, you know, when I get older. But I want to do well because I want to be able to serve Krishna nicely. That's like that's the spiritual core. That's my answer. So it doesn't mean I'm going to be slack or lazy or complacent in my academic work. I'm going to apply myself better when that spiritual core is strong because I'm motivated. I want to do lots of stuff for Krishna. And I'm going to need some tools and skills and abilities and things to serve Krishna nicely. So I'm into it. I'm going to be like double, triple attentive to do this little academic assignment here today for my homework. It's a different kind of motivation. When you really get it, it's a much more powerful motivation. They compete, win, prove yourself, show off, and that kind of thing. It's rare. But devotee children that have that, they're powerful. And Krishna reciprocates with that spirit of devotion. He gives them ability and intelligence and all kinds of things that they wouldn't have had if they just tried to compete. Do it on their own strength. For their own selfish purpose. So if you get it, you'll do really nicely. Your parents will go, "Wow, you got it. I mean, you're doing nicely." And you just smile inside saying, "It's for Krishna." Okay? Yes?
I had a related question.
Okay, go ahead.
How do you balance Krishna consciousness and education together?
Balance Krishna consciousness with?
Education.
Well, I just explained it, but I'll do it again. It's not... balance kind of means... to some people it means it's either this or that, and how much of this and how much of that. How do I balance between this and that? Is that what you mean? Kind of?
Kind of, but you know how you have homework sometimes, so how do you chant? So if you don't have time for chanting, so will you do your homework or chant?
Here's a solution. You ready? You sure? Well, in two words, be regulated. And regulated means, when it's time to do your homework, you're focused, you do your homework. And when it's time to do your devotional chanting and whatever it is, reading Bhagavad Gita, whatever you do, you're there and you do it and you're focused. And you stay regulated. So regulation is one. That's one part of the answer. And the other part of the answer is something that most kids don't like. And that is go to bed early, get up early. Yeah. You get it, Marsh. But if you do that, here's what will happen. Your chanting and those kind of things will happen first thing in the morning. And when you do those things first thing in the morning, what will happen? Whoa, you got energy and feeling enlivened. And then when it gets to doing your schoolwork, zoom, 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 schoolwork is done because you're energetic and enlivened. And how did that happen? Because you went to bed early and you got up early and you did your chanting early. It's real. It works. There are some children your age and a little bit older that do that, and they're excellent, excellent in their academic work. And there's some that can't do that, and they struggle, both in their chanting and in their academic work. How old are you?
I'm 9.
You're 9. Okay, your friend is 10. So even at 9, You can chant regularly if you do what I said. If you don't do what I said, then it's like this struggle thing. And then neither will your chanting be as strong, nor will your academic work be as strong. So if you want the answer, there's the answer. Take rest early, get up early, and do your chanting. Because it will give you rocket fuel, and you're like, there she goes. Wow, look at that girl. And your academic work is done like that. And then take rest early. Then that regulation, get up early. What time do you get up in the morning?
6:30.
Oh. Go ahead, your question.
But would it help me get through my day better if I chanted like 2 rounds before
yeah.
I started anything?
Yeah. I'm suggesting whatever your standard of your vrata is, your daily chanting, do it early in the morning. Best. It doesn't matter what your age is. It doesn't matter what your age is. It's not just for children. It doesn't matter what your age is. Anyone. You know, kids that go to college, kids that are in high school, kids that are in elementary school, adults that are like, you know, whatever their age is, as adults. It's the same standard. Get up early, take rest early, get up early, chant early, and zoom, zoom, zoom. And don't do that, it's struggle, struggle, struggle. How do I balance? Oh. And then even when you're doing your academic work, you're not as strong, and it's late now, I don't want to stay up late and chant, so you don't chant, or you chant. Staying up late and there's sloppy japa, and then the next morning it's not, you know, you don't get up in time, and it's real. The solution is simple. The application is just be convinced and do it. But you know your question, yeah, better to chant some, but better to chant quality than some. And the way to chant quality is chant early. What do you think? Yes, Maharaj. Now it comes doing it. Okay, we'll see. Anything else? Yes.
Kids to become a material advance by becoming a doctor, engineer, or we should work towards getting more spiritual advance.
It's his question, asked in a different way. It's case specific. I've seen parents do what you just said, and you know, the result isn't nice. Even if the child does become, you know, materially successful, what's inside? Are they really successful? Are they happy and, you know, their lives are spiritually progressive? See to each individual. That's a good teacher and a good parent. What's the nature of this child? It's exactly Canto 1, Chapter 9. I'll look it up. Text something. Prabhupada, the verse speaks of how a teacher teaches the child, and the purport Prabhupada details it, and especially the last paragraph. The universal principle is character. And then as you're teaching this universal principle of character, you see the nature of the child in your class, or the child in your home, the child in your care. And you place resources to amplify and augment and nourish that nature. That's education. And some will like this, and some will like that. And it's, you know, nourish their... have the core and nourish their propensity and in wholesome ways. That's parenting. That's education. It's your duty. You need to force, don't, you know. There'll be resentment on the other end. Even if there's compliance, there'll be resentment. We don't want that. Encouraging, etc., that's fine. Yes?
How can the devotee parents say that the material education and then please
Helping a child that doesn't understand about realities of adult life is certainly important. It's not a zero, but it's not a ten either. Because, you know, the value of that which will draw the greatest energy from an individual is that which will inspire them. And we've talked about this, but I'll say it publicly. You know, youth today have a different value. It's just, you know, like it or not, the value is not monetary, but what contribution am I going to make within society that'll make it a better society, a better place to live in? And well, what if there's less economic reward for that? That's okay. Now, the parent can say, well, you say that today, but where do you have that reality to face? So you can guide in that way. But what's wanted is the maximum energy where one feels really... I deal with so many people that they don't like what they're doing. And what's that like? They're making money, and they have stuff, so they don't have to worry about money. But they don't like what they're doing. That's hard. Because they bought into the paradigm, you know, you should become a such and such. And then it's too late, because now they did their education. I know one person that tried to go back and redo it. And it turned their life upside down. It broke their marriage. It was like awful. Awful. But they, you know, they were into doing something they didn't like doing. Because they made some decision some time back that said you should do something that's going to earn some, you know, a good salary. So they did it. They were really unhappy. It really hurt them. Anyway. Speaking adult reality to one who's not yet an adult is part of the responsibility of an adult. But also honoring the spirit of enthusiasm and, you know, holding this picture of reality at the same time. So when you make this decision, there's going to be this consequence, and this consequence, this is what it looks like. Is that really what you want? Let's get real. Not just, you know, dreamland. This is reality. But then decisions need to be made. Not imposed ones, but decisions about how one's going to... Anyway, you get the idea. Yeah.
This is a reality that... The concentration span of the children are very low.
Yeah.
And it applies to adults as well. I mean, as we grow, our concentration span gets wider. And when we teach the children to kind of be more concentrated or work in a direction, as you said, the spiritual being, make the spiritual being strong by spiritual practices, chanting and devotional services.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
That makes an impact, but the main impact is of association.
Which?
Association.
Okay.
And
the main impact, you
impact
say? Impact.
Impact. Association. So they associate more when they go to school.
Sure.
Yeah. So we teach them those values, and again, they go to school.
I understand.
They see the benefit, the short-term benefit of those things pretty easily. And they again get inclined towards doing the things which are even the easy things. And it's hard to make up. I mean, we try a lot, but it's hard. That's the biggest challenge I feel right now.
Yeah.
So what to do?
Well, again, you may not like the options. For conscientious adults, not only Hare Krishna devotees, but in this world, conscientious adults see the same thing. And then they start looking for, you know, if you get the same result, you do it every day, and you do it every day, and you do it every day, you start to ask yourself, is this the right model? Is there a better model? Are there other options besides the one that you just outlined? And then other options exist, but with those other options comes some precious time investment or other kinds of investment, money investment, or, you know, something. It's a qualitative investment for a longer-term gain. And am I prepared for that? But, you know, then it's like, you know, my values and my life and my time. So, you know, it comes back to the question she asked. Nice girl asked, how do you balance? And it's, you know, for a child, also for the adults. You know, how do we? So there are other options. And, you know, then you can look at those options and say, you know, does that fit? And if it doesn't fit, then you have this other one. You just continue with the other one. So you look at options and you can see if they fit, and then you take, because with everything in this world, there's pluses and minuses. So one of the options that I understand is happening is the temple is planning to develop a school. And some persons, that's going to be a fit. Some persons, it's not. One of the things that the devotees involved with the school are going to find out is parents all have a different idea of what education should be. You know, the parent-teacher association. The parents going, yada, yada, yada. The teacher's going, you don't understand about education. and all of that. And then, but that's a model. And homeschooling is another model. Some parents, that fit, it's a fit. Some parents decide later on, when the children say, I can't take it. This little girl's name is Aditi. There's another Aditi that I know that she's just turned 12. She doesn't want to keep going to public school because of, you know, what goes on in public school. She just doesn't want to do it. So the parents were like, it came from her, not from them. So they looked into different models of what they can do, and, you know, they're going to do one of them. And she's really happy. She wants to learn. She doesn't want the yucky stuff that goes along with the public school. It's her decision. So they're supporting her decision. And there's online stuff and this and that. And so there's different models. Besides the struggle, like you described. You're going to spend time. How do you want to spend your time? And it's case specific. Not every child is going to want the same thing that Aditi wanted when she turned 12. Case specific. And parents also, you know, what their needs are and their commitment level and things. It's complex. Yeah. I'm aware. For conscientious parents, it's don't be conscientious, it's no problem. Be conscientious and it's very complex. But you have to invest some time. There's no way around it. Either the way that you described or the other way or the other way or the other way. It's just like, what's the best fit for you and the particular dependent that you're concerned with? Aditi's got a younger sister. Younger sister isn't sure that's a fit for her. She likes her older sister. She may do the same thing. She may not. It's not like, you know, the younger sister has to do what the older sister did because the older sister did it. Yeah, exactly. So that's part of parenting. See the nature. Not just like, okay, this is what we're going to do for the rest of your education. Is here it is. Like it or not. It's, you know, it's a understanding between parent and child, and you work together.
So what I hear, man, no solution other than...
Huh?
There's no solution other than...
Krishna consciousness.
No options.
there must be... whatever the model, without the Krishna conscious core, it's It's not going to go anywhere. It's not going to go to a good place. Let's say that. Okay, looks like Prashadam is ready, yes?
Yes.
Let's serve Prashadam. Thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.
Wow, it's 9:30.